This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldone. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 239 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
So, do we have any announcements? I guess not really.
No.
Not really.
I have nothing.
Me either. The only thing was, I have to share with you guys because it's super funny
do
and super
cute.
I do. Summer and I were texting.
No.
Yes.
That's not worth talking about.
Okay, it's not an announcement, but I want to share it.
Because there's
no place for it in the show. Come on.
There's no place for it anywhere.
Whoa, try that again.
Sorry, I was yawning. I said, there's no place for it anywhere.
Okay, Summer was trying to tell me something, and I thought she spelled something in a certain way on purpose. And she corrected herself. She's like, no, I meant it this way. And she was trying to say, we were getting ready to record. She's like, I'll see you in a few minutes. I have to go pee. But instead of typing P-E-E, she wrote P-E-W. And I thought she was trying to tell me she had to go poo, but was putting it in a very cutesy, facetious way. Like, I have to go poo. And Summer's like, no, pee. And I don't talk like that. And I said, I know, like, but it's so funny. So anyway.
When is the last time I ever told you, hold on, Ginger, I got to poo? That's just not anything I ever do.
Hold on. You're right. But it's not that.
It doesn't matter.
Poo.
It doesn't matter. The intention. No, it's the intention behind it. Cutesy or not. Cutesy or not.
Okay.
My poo schedule is my own. I don't share that with you.
Your poo schedule.
I'm sorry.
I know that. That's why it's funny.
My schedule is my own. I don't share that with you, nerd.
Fair enough. Okay, so this episode is part of our Drums of Autumn read-along. To find out more and how to participate, visit outlanderpod.com/DOA.
And now, on to our read-along. This week, we are continuing our read-along of Drums of Autumn with Chapter 16, entitled The First Law of Thermodynamics.
So as Summer said, this chapter is called The First Law of Thermodynamics. Let's first look at the title of the chapter. The First Law of Thermodynamics: energy can neither be created nor destroyed. It can only change forms. In any process, the total energy of the universe remains the same. For a thermodynamic cycle, the net heat supplied to the system equals the net work done by the system. And I will share the link to that because, yes, I've studied physics, but it's been a dog year or three. And yeah, but I have to say that it's kind of funny that the site that you could find all kinds of references to, I should use the NASA site. That's the most credible. And then, oh, no, there's all kinds of uni sites. Of course, the problem is, I can just wrap my brain around it. And it's not even that technical. But for the layman, I'm just like, you know what? I don't even know. So the site that I chose to go with is physicsforidiots.com.
Seems appropriate.
Because it made me feel a lot better. So as a reader, remember the conversation in the last chapter. Jamie and Claire have talked about death, and Jamie wants to be asleep for it, and Claire does not want to be asleep for it, and he thinks it might not be a bad thing. He thinks it'll be all right. So how might that tie into this chapter? We'll maybe come back to that. Just putting this out there for a thought. The next morning, Claire wakes up naked, and a jay is pulling out some of her hair. Claire's poor hair. Quote, I had been told often enough that my hair looked like a bird's nest first thing in the morning. Perhaps there was something to it after all. Unquote. Cindy R. writes, this chapter is rather peaceful after all the energy of last chapter, what with the bear and the Indians. Claire wakes up to a bird literally trying to make a nest in her hair. Finally! I've been waiting for Diana to make this reference since I first envisioned Claire's Piggly Wiggly curls. A reference to Adam and Eve and the garden here, the Garden of Eden. Claire sees Jamie sleeping in the shade. Quote, a creeping patch of sunshine sneaking up on him, barely touching the ends of his hair. In the fresh, cool light, he looked like Adam, newly touched by his creator's hand. Unquote. And then, quote, a rather battered Adam, though. On closer inspection, this was a snap taken after the fall. Unquote. Claire, whose place has always been in hospitals, found the woods to be a place she didn't feel out of place in. That's a lot of place, right? And she thought this odd. Claire remembers a very physical, vital dream in which she was struggling with the bear. There were flecks of dried blood, smears on her thighs and belly. She remembers this great beast had shown amazing gentleness as it nuzzled her. She realizes it must have been real because of the blood she sees. One of the signs, quote, a strawberry crescent of a bite mark, unquote, on her shoulder. Remember the title of this part? We are in part 6, maybe part 5. It's called Strawberry Fields Forever. Cindy R. writes, Claire thinks she dreamed about a sexual encounter, but realizes it actually happened because she didn't go to bed naked. Really? How in the world? I have never experienced mistaking hot sex for a dream.
Blue Apron is the leading meal kit delivery service in the U.S., and while many people know what they do, many don't know about the types of meals you eat when you cook with Blue Apron.
So, Summer, can you remember a meal that you've gotten recently that you just loved?
I have a box coming next week, and I'm excited to love it. I haven't eaten it yet. There's like a 3-cheese calzone that I'm like crapping my pants over. Next week, in my box, my Blue Apron box, I'm expecting 3-cheese calzones with kale and golden raisins, Parmesan-crusted steaks with mashed potatoes and broccoli, and stovetop chicken parmesan with some kind of pasta. I can't pronounce that.
Well, that sounds good. So you're excited. And I am looking forward to trying that cheese calzone too. And we hope you enjoy Blue Apron because of the delicious food. But as always, there is more to enjoy than just the food.
I love the convenience of it because when I go to the store, a lot of times you can't just buy what you need to make a recipe. And this, the Blue Apron box comes with legitimately just enough food to make your recipe. So I know I've said this before, but if you've ever tried to buy celery for a recipe, you will end up with rotting celery in your fridge because you will not use it all. I've never come across a recipe that called for an entire bunch of celery. I don't know what.
So yeah, so Summer, I agree, is completely convenient. And I love the flexibility because if just for me, a vegetarian, I want to order a vegetarian box 1 month or 1 week, I can also change it up if I'm having guests over or having a small dinner party or something. I can make it like a mixed box and have not just a different animal-based protein, but keep my vegetarian, you know, choose a week that has a vegetarian, kind of like Summer's did, a vegetarian meal and non-vegetarian meals. So there's all kinds of things. The Blue Apron is treating Outlander podcast listeners to $30 off your first order if you visit blueapron.com/Outlander.
So check out this week's menu and get your $30 off at blueapron.com/Outlander.
Blue Apron, a better way to cook. Eileen P. writes, regarding bear sex. This is a long one. Get ready. Long one. Diana Gabaldon and George R. R. Martin, author of the Game of Thrones book series, have been friends for decades and have both written scenes about bear sex. Yes, bear sex, as in human having sex with a bear. I know, I haven't read this yet. Of course, in both books, bear sex happens after drinking, an abundance of drinking. In my research,
see,
I found that
makes
Diana
way more sense
wrote-
now. Because I only have sex with bears after an abundance of drinking. And by bears, I mean hairy gay men.
Oh, Summer, have you really?
No.
Oh, okay. Oh, got it. I thought you meant.
Really?
I forgot about the other word for bear. Name for
bear. Have you really?
I thought you were doing like a confessional here. In my research, Eileen continues, I found that Diana wrote her scene first in Drums of Autumn, which was published in 1996, whereas George wrote his in A Storm of Sores, which was published in 2000.
Yeah, so she really had the leg up in the bear sex department.
I guess so.
I was not having bear sex dreams in 1996.
Of course, both of them take years to write one book. So George was in the process of writing his book when Diana was finishing hers. Just wondering if George loved the bear sex scene in Diana's book so much that he decided to have one in his book too. Here's the story from A Storm of Swords of Tormund Giantsbane's Night with the She-Bear. Okay, quote, are you ready for bear sex? Okay, where was I? Quote, I was in me ruddy hall with only a cask. Oh God, now I'm going to have to do like, I'm not going to do accents, but like read dialect. Good grief, woman. I was in me ruddy hall with only a cask of mead to keep me company and nothing to do but drink it. The more I drank, the more I got thinking about this woman lived close by, a fine, strong woman with the biggest pair of teeth you ever saw. She had a temper on her, that one, but oh, she could make me warm. She could be warm, too, and in the deep of winter, a man needs his warmth. The more I drank, the more I thought about her, and the more I thought, the harder me member got. This is like that Ippolnay.
Typical wildling. No, it's a wildling. Tormund is a wildling. Yes, you do. Have you watched Game of Thrones?
Not the names. Of course I have. I don't know the names, though.
Okay. Tormund is the one who, he's the redheaded wildling who's hot for Brienne of Tarth.
He's kind of cute. The harder me member got till I could suffer it no more. Fool that I was, I bundled myself up in furs from head to heels, wrapped in a winding wool around me face, and set off to find her. The snow was coming down so hard I got turned around once or twice, and the wind blew right through me and froze me bones. But finally, I come on her. And I think he means come up on her, but yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
He's not quite there yet. All bundled up like I was.
I'm like, that was sudden.
Right? The woman had a terrible temper, and she put up quite a fight when I laid hands on her. It was all I could do to carry her home and get her out of them furs. But when I did, oh, she was hotter than even I remembered, and we had a fine old time. And then I went to sleep. The next morning when I woke, the snow had stopped and the sun was shining, but I was in no fit state to enjoy it. All ripped and torn as I was, and had me member bit right off.
Wow.
And there on me floor was a she-bear's pelt. And soon enough, the free folk were telling tales of this bald bear seen in the woods with the queerest... with the queerest pair of cubs behind her. Horror. Wow. He slapped his meaty thigh. Would that I could find her again. She was fine to lay with, that bear. Never was a woman give me such fight, nor such strong sons, neither. Thank you, Eileen P. And she says, I think Claire enjoyed her Jamie bear sex, too. Quote, that was enough to bring back the shadow of the dream, or what I had thought must be one. The great bulk of the bear looming over me, darker than the night and reeking of blood, a rush of terror that kept my dream heavy limbs from moving. My lying limp, pretending as he nudged and nuzzled, breath hot on my skin, fur soft on my breasts, gentleness amazing for a beast. Then that one sharp moment of consciousness, of cold, then hot, as bare skin, not bare skin, touched my own. And then the dizzy slide back into drunken dreaming, the slow and forceful coupling, climax fading into sleep with a soft Scottish growling in my ear.
I prefer my bears to have soft Scottish growling.
Me too. I looked at the strawberry crescent of a bite mark on my shoulder. No wonder you're still asleep, I said in accusation. The sun touched the curve of his cheek, lighting the eyebrow on that side like a match touching to kindling. He didn't open his eyes, but the slow, sweet smile spread across his face in answer. Unquote. Eileen finishes. Let's add an excerpt from the song The Bear and the Maiden Fair. Sure, Eileen, let's. Quote, my bear, she sang, my bear so fair. And off they went from here to there. The bear and the maiden fair. Unquote. And that was also from A Storm of Swords by George R.R. Martin. Holy smokies, like this chapter or this episode just took like a bestiality turn. Gracious.
Y'all, who knew that was a thing?
Bestiality? It is a thing.
No, bear sex. That was not something I...
Oh.
You know, of all the things I read in this chapter, that was not anything I zoned in on.
Me either. Oh, Lord.
So imagine my quelle surprise when that's what we just spent the last 15 minutes talking about.
Someone tweeted today that they could actually learn from our shows. And it was kind of tongue in cheek, but they specifically mentioned that they learned that, because I learned, and it was in our last episode 238, I learned during that discussion of ticks that ticks breathe out of their butts. As Summer, to quote Summer.
I say butts, but you know, that's yes.
Whatever.
It is through their skin, but what's exposed? Their rear ends are what's exposed.
But yeah. I'm just quoting you.
That's true. That's what I said.
That was perfect. So last episode, we learned that ticks breathe through their butts. And this episode, we learn that there are authors, more than one, that write about bear sex. And apparently, yeah, I didn't think it was a thing either. Every time I wash my bedding, and I have a few sets, so when I take one off to wash, I'll put the next one on. Can I just tell you, my happiest days or nights in that rotation are the nights that I have my Brooklinen sheets. You spend a third of your life in your sheets, and I spend a third of my time in a third of my nights in my Brooklinen sheets, so I need more. Sheets make a difference with how you sleep. Start getting better sleep with better sheets.
The philosophy behind Brooklinen sheets was beautiful home essentials with no crazy prices. Most bedding is marked up as much as 300%.
And Brooklinen sheets have been named the winner of the best of online bedding category by Good Housekeeping. This is luxury bedding underpriced. You have to try these sheets today or maybe tonight.
Or maybe right now. I love my Brooklinen sheets. Brooklinen.com has an exclusive offer just for our listeners.
Get $20 off and free shipping when you use promo code Outlander at Brooklinen.com. Brooklinen is so confident that they offer a risk-free 60-night satisfaction guarantee and a lifetime warranty on all of their sheets and comforters.
The only way to get $20 off and free shipping is to use promo code Outlander at brooklinen.com. That's brooklinen.com, promo code Outlander.
Brooklinen, these are the best sheets ever. Jamie and Claire, now alone in their wanderings, continue into territory yet unseen. Jamie tells Claire that he had checked before they left to see what land exactly was available for settling, always keeping his mind open as to its settling. He's always thinking about it. As they trek, there are more references to Eden. Quote, the forest primeval, unquote. And then Claire identifies pines and hemlocks. Symbolism? Well, the hemlock is in the pine family, and Iroquois tribes saw the pine as a symbol of peace and burned pine as incense to pacify ghosts and banish nightmares. Among tribes of the Great Basin and Plateau, pine cones or pine wood were burned in hopes of changing weather to be more favorable. Pine pitch and bark are used as medicine and herbs in many tribes. And I will put all, that is from Native Languages, native-languages.org, and I will share these links in the show notes as well. Cindy R. writes, so they head off to explore the territory available for settling. Claire makes a reference to the towering pines and hemlocks and Longfellow having, quote, no idea. She's making reference to Longfellow's poem, Evangeline. And Cindy R. provides us with the link, so we'll provide that as well. Cindy continues, you can almost feel Jamie's pure joy as he takes in the beauty of the undisturbed wilderness. I have never personally seen the mountains of North Carolina, but I can read and I can Google, and my imagination works quite well, so I'm going to say it's stunningly breathtaking. They stop in a clearing, and Claire spies wild strawberries. I love this whole section describing how Clan Fraser's emblem has been the strawberry and how its parts describe honor, courage, and constancy. Jamie Fraser to a T. So as they are wandering, they find wild strawberries. So let's look into this. Besides Fraser, of course, what do strawberries symbolize? According to the University of Illinois Extension article, Strawberries and More, they connote purity, passion, and healing. Well, we've got the passion and the healing, right? Purity, maybe in their intentions? Who knows? We'll have to think about that one. Native Americans were already eating the berries when colonists arrived. Summer, I saw this and almost freaked out. They crushed berries and mixed them with cornmeal to make strawberry bread. What? Doesn't that sound delicious?
Sounds like cornbread with jelly on it.
Oh, gosh.
Like strawberry cornbread? Strawberry cornbread. That's what I'm imagining, right?
Yeah, I don't know. Strawberry, it's in it. The strawberries in, crushed them and put them in the bread. Wow. This lovely fruit used to be a symbol of the goddess Venus due to its color and shape in the shape of a heart. And medieval stonemasons carved strawberry designs on altars and tops of pillars in churches and cathedrals to symbolize perfection and righteousness. And we have birds to thank for the berry's wide distribution. And it is the only fruit that has its seeds on the outside rather than inside. Ancient Romans believed the berries alleviated symptoms of melancholy, fainting, inflammation, fevers, throat infections, kidney stones, and I had to stop somewhere because gracious, there's lots more. And Claire notes how happy Jamie is here in the mountains. Quote, happiness was sticking out all over him like porcupine quills. How lovely is that? That is one of those. I mean, Diana gives great description. This is quite short and very illustrative. I mean, you can get a vision of it right as soon as she says it, right? It almost like hurts because of the vision of porcupine quills sticking out of him. Did you like that some?
The porcupine description?
Yeah.
It was apropos.
Claire, on the other hand, felt that her heart was like lead in her chest, unquote. And also the strawberry's shape is a heart. So I'm not saying the strawberry is symbolic at all, but there's the heart. One of the things with the heart, the strawberry is the shape of a heart and it's red, but Fraser, of course, is strawberry. So you have all of this symbolism tied up in the berry. And it represents a potential settling place at this point because he's like on cloud nine, looking throughout all the land that they're surveying what they can, and he is happier than anything. I mean, heck, happiness was sticking out all over him like porcupine quills, so he's happy. And Claire, as his happiness grows, feels heaviness in her heart. So her strawberry isn't so ripe right now. What do you think?
I think strawberries also look like penis heads.
Oh, Lord.
But I think they look more like penis heads than hearts.
Sam, what do you think caused Claire's lead weight in her chest? Was it the excitement or anxiety waiting, or I should say, before you finished the chapter, what did you think, maybe the first time, because you probably can't remember that far back, but before you found out what it really was, what did you think caused Claire's heavy heart? Was it the excitement or anxiety waiting for Jamie to make his pronouncement? What did you think?
I know exactly what it was, though. I can't unknow what's coming, and it's the trepidation of thinking of him trying to people this land.
Ah,
okay. And where he's going to find these people.
Got it. Claire finds wild strawberries, another mention of strawberries, when they stop in a clearing. Jamie sees this as potentially a good place for them to settle. It has a spring, a meadow, and areas that could be made into fields. And the strawberry might be a sign as it's the emblem of Clan Fraser, which started with a Monsieur Fraselier. The plant has white flowers for honor, red fruit for courage, and green leaves for constancy. And the fruit is shaped like a heart, like we already said, so they take advantage of their alone time and celebrate that heart. I love the conversation. I love the conversation and how she says, "Je suis prêt, Monsieur Fraselier." And he replies, "Je suis à votre service, Madame Fraselier." And they consummate the forest primeval. Eileen P. writes, as Claire and Jamie make their way through the forest, you get the feeling that they're in a cross between the Garden of Eden and the fairy realm. Claire senses the otherworldliness, describing, quote, the places between the trees seemed illusionary, as though to pass between those huge lichened trunks might transport one suddenly to another dimension of reality, unquote. Soon Claire recollects Abandoe, the voice of the cave wind, and the thought, where else? I'm assuming this question has something to do with the time travel, but it asks where, not when. That confuses me. Where should you go next? Where are more portals? What does where else mean? The thing that I thought of, especially now that she brings my attention to it, was not, I mean, okay, the most obvious thing for me to think would be, if not here, as in settling, where else might we settle if we don't settle here? Because Jamie's getting hot to trot for this place. Except that she linked it to Voyager. You know what I'm saying? She linked it to the cave and if not here, where? So I do see how Eileen is having a sense of, or is linking something to time travel. But like she says, it's where, not when. My first guess would be, if we don't settle here, then where? But
I think that's the best
guess.
Yeah. You know, not being Diana Gabaldon personally, I think that that's the answer that makes the most sense. Because if not here, then where? You found a place that's well-placed with a ready water source, and it's clearly got fertile soil, you know, and they've already, you know, laid claim to it sexually. So might as well. If not here, then where?
Eileen continues. As they progress through the forest, there is a nice touch of dragonflies among the flora and fauna, an ode to their wedding gift from Hugh Monroe. This time, the dragonflies fly free rather than being trapped and fossilized in amber. Could this be symbolic of Jamie and Claire finding a place where they can live freely?
Nope. I've read too many of these books.
Well, that's only because you've read all the books.
I'm like, I've read too many of your books, Diana Gabaldon. Nothing is free.
Eureka, Eileen writes. Wild strawberries. This is not only a land of abundance, but one ripe with signs and symbolism. There are maple trees, which are symbols of love, longevity, success, and abundance, and sycamores, symbols of strength, endurance, persistence, and growth. There are also pine trees. Note the scent of pine at the end of the chapter. To celebrate their newfound home, Jamie and Claire must have sex, but there is more to it than that. And this kind of goes to what Summer was saying. Quote, in the old days, men would do this to give fertility to the fields. Unquote. I'm sure the fields of Jamie and Claire will be very fertile. So Claire is having some come to Jesse moments here. Quote, and this is about them settling, right? What I had thought a trap for him, his family, his clan, was his strength. And what I had thought was my strength, my solitude, my lack of ties, was my weakness. Having known closeness, both its good and its bad, he had the strength to leave it, to step away from all notions of safety and venture out alone. And I, so proud of self-sufficiency at one time, could not bear the thought of loneliness again. Unquote. So Claire, as we said, Claire is afraid, and she finally tells him. As she's expressing her fear, Jamie begins to, just a little bit, like the whole lip twitch, almost making a little bit of fun of her. And she is furious that he laughs. She's like, do not do that. And she doesn't say bloody Scott, but she's like, you Scott, as an epithet. She's afraid he'll go back to Scotland to find settlers for this place and that he'll die there. She is honestly terrified that she'll lose him. She tells him that's where his grave is. That she's seen. Jamie points out that a trip to Scotland isn't really in the cards right now. He can't afford it. Nor can he afford to bring people back with him. Her reply,
you bloody Scot,
quote, you'll think of something, you always do, unquote. Cindy R. writes, Claire has a growing sense of dread, feeling that her heart was like lead in her chest. I remember the first time I read this chapter, I felt somewhat taken aback by her response. Why in the world would she feel this way when Jamie was so obviously happy? Was it fear of isolation? Fear of the wilderness? Fear of lugging water for 2 miles each day just to wash some dishes? Haha, if that were the case, her legs would feel like lead, not her heart. They get jiggy in the berry patch. Sigh, I just adore their interludes. I was a bit peeved at how irrational Claire gets during her tirade. She bites his thumb? And not even one JHRC in here. How uncharacteristic. Jamie's humor here is such a balance to her cray-cray. Quote, ah, you haven't been eating any of the plants you picked this morning, have you? Unquote. Thinking maybe she's eaten something something to give her hallucinations. Makes me wonder how he handled her PMS. You can just feel her desperation, that feeling of utter loneliness she carried for so many years after Culloden suddenly returns to her as she imagines his death. Thinking of that and really understanding what triggered her irrational response, I was a little more understanding of why she reacted the way she did. So Jamie tells her, instead of that thing she said she's afraid of, he wants to find his Ardsmuir men who are already there in the colonies to and invite them to settle with them. Jimmy says he would not accept Jocasta's offer, even if Claire didn't feel so strongly about the slaves. Quote, I have lived as a slave, and I couldn't live knowing there was a man on earth who felt toward me as I have felt toward those who thought they owned me. Unquote. This chapter is full of other beautiful quotes. Favorites from the series, from the overall series, there are so many in this book, including, you are my courage as I am your conscience, says Jamie. Also, you are my heart and I your compassion. We are neither of us whole alone. Do you not know that, Sassenach? And, quote, but do you not see how very small a thing is the notion of death between us two, Claire? Unquote. The statement about his being dead in 200 years really gets one thinking about life and death and the soul. He says in 200 years, in her origin, in her time of origin, he certainly was dead. And when she came back, he was alive. And at some point, he will die. And Claire acknowledges this. Quote, I nodded, wordless. Even now, I could look back and see the abyss of despair into which that parting had dropped me, and from which I had climbed one painful inch at a time. Unquote. And he says, quote, I was dead, my Sassenach, and yet all that time I loved you. Unquote. Quote, I closed my eyes, feeling the tickle of the grass on my lips, light as the touch of sun and air. I loved you too, I whispered. I always will. Unquote. And he replies, quote, so long as my body lives and yours, we are one flesh. And when my body shall cease, my soul will still be yours. Claire, I swear by my hope of heaven, I will not be parted from you. Unquote. And at the end of the chapter, we get a reference to the title, that first law of thermodynamics. Quote, nothing is lost, Sassenach, only changed. Unquote. That's the first law of thermodynamics, I said, wiping my nose. No, he said, that's faith. Unquote. Now that gave me, I'm not going to lie, you guys, gave me a little tear prick because obviously the story, that's beautiful, it's sad, but it also reminded me of...
Dead babies.
The reference, it's a reference to their beloved lost child.
Dead baby.
And as well as to his faith in God, the universe, etc.
But mostly dead babies.
And Summer's favorite song and episode of Outlander ever.
Which should have been entitled like a subtitle, Dead Babies.
Stop it. I got you now. I read your sign. This chapter is a peaceful, reflective spot after the excitement, danger, and movement of the previous few. I mean, remember, it was so much movement. So there was a slave in danger. There's a group of them on the run, the bear killing, etc. Eileen P. writes, finally, Claire tells Jamie about her fear of him dying. She tells him about seeing his gravestone in Scotland. My question, why did she wait so long? So we can get lines like this.
I feel like she rides a very like thin line between
Diana or Claire?
Claire and Diana because she's the writer of it, but you don't want, she's clearly in the past not been able to influence history.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Oh, so she thought, okay, so you think keeping it is like, she's like, I can't change it anyway, so.
Maybe. I think, you know, you run that fine line between, you know, am I here because I'm willingly being part of the past now, or am I still trying to change it? And trying to change it in the past has not assisted her and hasn't changed anything. So I think there's a part of her that acknowledges the fact that almost no matter what she does, things tend to occur. So not maybe she feels like not saying it out loud means that she's not helping it happen sooner. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
I don't know.
Cindy R. writes, this chapter just whets the appetite for all the adventure they're sure to encounter as they decide where to live and then build their lives together, wherever that is. I've always been intrigued with pioneers and the settling of this great nation.
And that was chapter 16 and the end of part 5. Join us next week when we begin delving into part 6 entitled Je T'aime and the return of young Roger Mack and Brianna.
As always, join us to continue the conversation in our Facebook community. Find us at outlanderpod.com/group.
And if you want to join us and contribute to our read-along, visit us at www.outlanderpod.com/DOA to find out more.
If you love our show and are entertained by it, please visit our Patreon page and consider supporting us. Every bit helps cover our costs, be it hosting, recording, equipment, etc. There are also many free ways to help support our show. The most important is to help spread the word. Tell your friends and family and any Outlander lover you know about the Outlander podcast. And thank you as always so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.